Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border. Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Happy to have you on board. A little bit later on, we'll do a little recap of some of the Triple Crown and Belmont Stakes action from last week with Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette. He was at all of the Triple Crown races, including last weekend down in New York. So we'll catch up with him towards the bottom of the hour. But in the meantime, a big day down at Monmouth this afternoon. Four very nice stakes races, and who better to reach out to than the track announcer and also the pregame paddock commentator doing a little handicapping every day down at Monmouth, Chris Griffin. Chris, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Seth. Good to be with you. I think our maiden voyage together, so excited about that. Happy to be on, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And I will start out, since it is the maiden voyage, just asking you how the past year has been, or maybe a little less than a year, because certainly I remember when you were announcing down in Texas and then moved on to Pennsylvania. Now you have the very enviable circuit of a little New York for much of the year, and then the Jersey Shore as well. So how's it been the past, 9-10 months or so?
Yes, a P.O. box is my friend. It's just very hard to get fully settled into a residence once in a while when you're bouncing around a little bit. But I've been very lucky, with the opportunities that have come my way and been able to seize those opportunities and have a really good time. But, yeah, I got a chance to be at Aqueduct this past winter with Naira, and that was fantastic. Here at Monmouth Park, obviously, during the summer. And prior to that, over at Parks. And then, Sam Houston was a great time as well. And have gotten to know a lot of people, have come across a lot of great people in this sport and a lot of different connections, and have an opportunity to just really see the entire country and really experience it, get to call horse races and be in a booth. I mean, it's amazing sometimes to call this a job and a career, because it's just fun. You're having fun and enjoying yourself. It's hard work. It's tough. But like most trainers would say, wouldn't trade places with anybody right now, Seth. I'm very happy with where I'm at.
You talk about the hard work, and they don't do it anymore, but it used to be hilarious. I want to say it was Laurel. I'm virtually certain it was one of the Maryland tracks. There'd be one day a year where they invited all the local media people, or a bunch of the local media people, and each one would call one race. And what was hilarious was the first shot out of the gate, you could tell they had rehearsed the night before. So they got them all great for about the first furlong, and then it completely fell apart. And I could certainly relate. I don't think I'd be able to do your job, and you do a great job at it. So, again, that I'm sad that annual event has gone away, because I think it emphasized how difficult the job actually is.
Well, we have 14 races today at Monmouth Park, so we would have had plenty of opportunities for local media. We would have had to have a lot of media in the house to be able to pull something like that off. But, yeah, you know, it's funny. There was also, the all-star announcers that they used to have before. Yeah. And it's funny. I've come across plenty of announcers and my peers and talked to them about that. That sounded like a great time, actually. That sounded like a nice time where the announcers could call a race and then they could just kind of hang out with each other and share stories. So, we yearn for those days a little bit. I think that would have been a fun experience, but having a great time enjoying it. We've got some great racing action, like you said, here at Monmouth Park at the Jersey Shore today. We've got just a tremendous weekend. You know, Father's Day is tomorrow, which is our second biggest day of the year. Haskell Preview Day is going to be right up there with one of our biggest days. So it's an exciting weekend for sure.
Yeah, and you mentioned that over the years talking to people at the various venues, Father's Day is always a very popular day at the racetrack, understandably. Again, wish you guys a lot of good luck all weekend long. And we'll talk specifically the stakes races coming up. But I did want to touch on, because I pulled up the stats on Equibase last night on the human side of things, as we're, a few weeks into the meet already. Paco Lopez, no surprise, leading the jockey. Sammy Camacho, who we all appreciate the winter down at Tampa, doing very well, second. Over on the trainer side of things, Chad Brown leading the trainers on the trainer side, Delgado, and Rob Falcone, another trainer we think of over in New York, but he's doing great over there at Monmouth so far. Interesting factors on the human side of things early in the meet.
Yeah, I mean, names that we're familiar with on a national and a world global landscape as far as horse racing is concerned. I mean, when you see Chad Brown, when you see Robert Falcone, these are names that you're very familiar with. But, yeah, they've been able to send out quite a few runners here early on in the meet. They've been able to get them to the winner's circle, as they continue to do across the board at every racetrack that you see. And now we got some big races coming up, and so you start to see Todd Fletcher. You start to see Brad Cox and some other names that, again, you're very familiar with, that you know are going to have big shots in these stakes races. So we've got everything right now at Monmouth Park. It's an exciting time. We got 14 races, like I pointed out, and it's an exciting time. We got a horse that ran in the Kentucky Derby that's coming back in the Pegasus, which is going to kick off that all-stakes pick four. So from a wagering standpoint, we get an all-stakes pick four mixed in with three other pick fours in the afternoon and three pick fives. So if you like those multi-leg wagers, you can get them all there. And so, yeah, it's been a great start. As far as the jockeys are concerned, you talk about Paco Lopez and Sammy Camacho. You know, you kind of look for the time where you think Paco Lopez is going to open up that lead a little bit, right? Because he's going to have a lot of mounts. He likes to ride a lot of different races. And you're going to see him have those 4 or 5 win days. That's not out of the ordinary here at Monmouth Park, especially with 14 races on the card. You can expect some multi-win days for some of these riders. But Sammy Camacho's kind of come back and kind of come right back at him. So if Paco wins 3 one day, then Sammy comes back and he'll win 3 the next. And if they keep going back and forth and kind of bandying back and forth throughout the season, you're going to see the top two separate a little bit from the rest of the jockey colony. But it's going to be a nice matchup as they score off head to head. Now you'll see them leave town and maybe take some some stakes mounts and some other cards, and that'll give opportunities for riders that are sticking around for that Saturday or Sunday, and so it creates a really competitive atmosphere, and I think it fires up Paco, and I think it fires up Sammy too, right? Because the jockey title is going to be well within range for both of them, and it's something we can follow throughout the summer.
Yeah, it definitely will be a lot of fun to watch. And as you say, one goes out of town and maybe the other gets a shot at getting the 2 or 3 and making a little ground
there. We see it all the time.
Yeah.
We see it all the time, Seth.
It'll definitely be a lot of fun to watch going through. All right, let's get to it, because you've mentioned it. All stakes pick four, and we'll kind of go through the sequence in order, starting with race number 10, the Pegasus for the 3-year-olds. And we mentioned it on the handicapping show we did earlier. I've been saying it now, really, since the results of the Preakness. This 3-year-old scene is totally up in the air. So maybe somebody, you know, steps forward, Pegasus this afternoon, Haskell coming up. But I looked in this race in the Pegasus, and I wanted to go against King's Barnes, but he just seems so potent. I pulled up the Louisiana Derby to watch as a replay. King's Barnes here will be the number 6 horse getting it done. I'm going back to that. I'm going to kind of draw a line through the Kentucky Derby. I have him on top. I thought Subrogate was very intriguing, though, that they were bold enough to try this spot. Classic Catch is interesting. You mentioned the big names coming in on the trainer and jockey side for the day. Brad Cox has Salute the Stars. Fun race. I'll be interested to see where you went, though. King's Barnes or another direction?
Yeah, King's Barnes is going to end up being the top pick, and, you know, it's a little bit of a Captain Obvious play, but let me talk about some of those other horses in the field that you are pointing out. Subrogate, the thing is that if you're going to give me a horse that's going to be against King's Barnes, that who I liked in the Kentucky Derby, by the way, I had him on top. I just thought that I didn't know they were going to go 45-3, but silly me, that's just what always happens in the Derby. But you get Luis Saez now getting back aboard. He was aboard for the debut at Gulfstream Park. Everything makes sense there. Subrogate, you're going to take, you know, 5-1 on the morning line versus an 8-5 morning line on King's Barnes. I need pretty clear separation from an odd standpoint for Subrogate to be in that discussion. We're talking about a horse that, yes, there is some upside. Yes, the connections like this horse a lot. He's a 3-year-old colt by Arrogate. I think that he's going to continue to develop, and I think that this horse is really going to make some noise throughout the rest of this year and as he gets older as well. He's won his maiden. He won it sprinting at 6.5 furlongs. This is just a tall task. I mean, it's a big ask to be able to step up to this type of company and to be running against the Louisiana Derby winner and also the horse that ran in the Kentucky Derby. I thought Classic Catch held some appeal, and I know that, you know, if you're going to take a look at the top two betting choices, both for Todd Fletcher, the effort by Arcangelo in the Belmont is really going to rise the stock for me on the one Classic Catch. You get Paco Lopez on the rail draw. He's going to have to be closer to the pace. He's been a little bit further back. He's going to be closer, I think, to King's Barnes. If King's Barnes is able to just kind of slow it down up front, he should be long gone on the front end. Not going to see a ton of pressure. Maybe Subrogate goes with him a little bit. How great is Nate is fairly interesting. He shows some speed. He was pretty gutty last time. Awfully cool. Came back to win off of that start. Kings Barnes is the top pick. I'll go classic catch. If that price is way too low on Kings Barnes, though, give me the other Fletcher runner, so I'll go with the one. Just see if classic catch can kind of come out of that Peter Pan race, which might be coming back as a strong race. I mean, if you take a look at Arcangelo winning the Belmont, like I say, take that common running line. Horse comes out of that spot. Let's land on the one and see, you know, to me it's Fletcher in the 10th, and we'll just see if we can get through that first leg.
Yeah, you're right. Last week's result may have flattered the Peter Pan a little bit. And Subrogate, you make a great point. I have him right underneath, but I'm kind of hoping he floats up from the 5-1 because 5-1 seems a little light given the scenario you laid out. Tries two turns for the first time, steps out of maiden company into, you know, a kind of a salty little stakes race. So, yeah, I'm hoping that one floats up a little bit.
Yeah, and Seth, you know, it's better. I just want to be rewarded if I'm going to take that leap. And I have nothing but the utmost respect for Jorge Duarte Jr. I got a chance to hang out over at Kultnik. I got to see Subrogate hang out with him, and he's a good-looking son of Arrogate, as a lot of them are. I think he's going to continue to improve. I just would want to see it from a weighting standpoint that I'm right around more 10-1, something like that, to feel like, you know, if he does pull off the upset, it's a true upset, which you may end up seeing. We'll see how short the price goes on King Farm.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting to watch because I agree with you that 8 or 10-1 is a little more attractive. All right, let's go to the Eatontown race number 11. Top of the page, I have written competitive here. And we didn't ask you at the top because yesterday, obviously, I was in here doing our afternoon handicapping show, and early on, it looked like a pretty good storm for the first race, and then things kind of cleared out. What's your weather look like today, and what's the turf scenario?
Yeah, so we caught some rain that was a little bit earlier in the day yesterday, and as you guys saw on TV, it blew through, and then it kind of cleared out. You know, as far as the weather projections and whatnot, it was raining for a bit, and then it kind of cleared out. Let me get that final track condition if I could find it. I would think that we're going to be fast and firm. As far as our kicking things off, I haven't been in the racing offices to check that. I should have checked that actually before I jumped on. I do know that the turf rail has come down. It was at 36 feet yesterday. That turf rail is going to come down. So you got some fresh turf down on the inside for these stakes races, and I think that that's going to really set up for some nice efforts this afternoon. So I'll see if I can confirm that here in the next 5 minutes or so. But I'm going to assume fast and firm unless I have anything different. I'm looking outside of the track right now, and I think that's what we're going to be pointing
Okay,
towards.
Perfect. So let's jump into the Eatontown. These are fillies and mares going 1/16 on the grass, and as I say, I wrote competitive at the top of the page. I'm pulled up for a replay, the Bogey, going back to early May. It's going to be market segmentation, number 3 winning, but a couple of horses that are in this afternoon, number 2 consumer spending, and number 6 in here, or excuse me, number 8 in here, surprisingly running 3rd. I put surprisingly on top. I think, you know, the Shug McGahey runner, Paco Lopez, on board. Again, I think you could kind of juggle these up and have a similar confidence. Vergara for me in the second spot, consumer spending. I might kick myself. I'm leaving Gina Romantica out of the mix. I went 1, 2, 3, and 6. How did you see the Eatontown?
Yeah, so, I mean, you're taking a look at some of those inside draws. I think the 6 is an interesting case there. Malavath is a 4-year-old filly that, you know, if you take a look at some of her form when she was running in France, she was knocking heads with some of the top horses on that circuit. And then she came back in the Breeders' Cup Mile, 5th, beating a length in 3/4. I called that race at Aqueduct, the Plenty of Grace there, with Evie Jets winning that race on the front end, setting slower fractions, 49-3, as you saw. White Beam came out of that effort, and White Beam, I mean, she blitzed the field there. Was it Preakness Day, or was it Black Eyed Susan Day? I mean, it was the weekend at Pimlico, and she was ultra impressive. So give me the 6 Malavath. I mean, it's Joel Rosario. It's an odds-on favorite. Beaten favorite angle, just needed to kind of get that experience. Now comes over here to Monmouth in a grade 3. So a horse that comes off of a very subpar effort off of the layoff, off of the barn switch, you know, for connections that obviously know how to get it done. Now Joel Rosario is going to be aboard. And a horse that only finished a length behind Modern Games in the Breeders' Cup Mile. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to be on board with a horse like that. So go ahead and give me the 6 Malavath. If she's 4-1, I think that's great. I think it looks like a wide-open betting race. Gina Romantica, obviously, coming off of a layoff like that, hasn't been seen since October. A 4-year-old filly by Into Mischief that, if she comes with her game, she can win. She comes out of the Queen Elizabeth that was at Keeneland, a grade 1 type race. She's going to start her season here in a grade 3. She's had that time off. Chad Brown knows how to win off these layoffs. Spirit and Glory is the local, you know, had a run over here over the course. That's the number five for Robert Falcone Jr., as you talked about. She seems to sit the right trip. Nick Juarez, that was a really nice effort from her last time. She's not that far off of Scottish Star. Scottish Star is going to be sitting the fractions. Luis Saez is going to take over the mount. This is a really nice race here, the Eaton Town for a grade three. They're going to come out of the chute. Some of the horses towards that outside draw, and it's something I'm going to keep an eye on throughout the season. Just some of those outside draws, it seems like they kind of break outward as they're getting ready to come out of that chute. I don't know why. It's just one of those things that maybe you kind of just, your momentum kind of carries you to the right a little bit. For Katie's a Lady, I think that that's going to be a little bit interesting. I think Vargas is going to break out of the gate. She went wild fractions and she kept opening up. And Vargas takes over the mount. She went 140 and three for a mile and 16th. And she went 109 and fourth for three quarters. I mean, she was moving on the front end. So there's going to be plenty of pace in here. All that pace is going to set up for what I think is going to be kind of a time perfectly ride here for the six in Malavap, because if she gets rolling in the stretch and if she gets back to some of those runs that we saw prior to that run at Aqueduct, I think she's going to have a really big shot. So I'll be on the six. That would be my top selection there.
Yeah, and I have no argument. I looked at that one as well. As I say, I think it's a really competitive race. I'm hoping the closing kick plays into a surprisingly who I hope can save a little ground on the inside, but it's a fun race, no question about it. And Salvatore Mile, race number 10, grade three event, $150,000. They will go a mile. I put Artorias on top. And again, I was a little bit dicey. I looked around, but I just thought this horse started the career with so much promise. Came out of the maiden breaker in the third career start, moving on from the maiden breaker to the third career start win in the Curlin up at Saratoga, and then just kind of faltered in the Traverse and the Perryville a little bit. But certainly Chad Brown can have him ready. I'm going to go pull up the replay from the Curlin last year up at Saratoga. Artorias is going to be the nine. I'm going back to that. But Nimitz Class, I think, is very playable. Riding with Biden is interesting. I think you have to draw a line through the Pegasus. Bourbon Calling with the 100 buyer, two starts back. Fun race. What did you see in the Salvatore Mile?
Yeah, when you take a look at that race, so Ride with Biden and Farmer Power both were entered at Parks tomorrow. The 18th is tomorrow, right? I got to check my dates. I believe they're going to go there. So I think the two and the four are going to scratch out of that race, actually. So taking a look at that 12th, taking a look at the Salvatore Mile. So that does change the pace scenario up a little bit. Nimitz Class is kind of the now horse. He's taken his race everywhere. He's been winning impressively. He's put up big figures. He's had really good success at Laurel. I mean, this is a 10-time winner from 16 lifetime starts. But now he's taken the step up. Now he's going into a grade three. He has not seen great stakes company here in the last starts, as far as I'm looking on paper. Four-year-old colt by Munnings is just going to tackle some different horses in here. Artorias, when you take a look at Chad Brown, Florent Giroux, yes, four-year-old colt by Arrogate. We've talked about these connections. They're hitting at almost 40% here at the meet. I'm a little concerned just off of how he fires fresh. He didn't win his debut. He looks like he was, just some okay efforts. He had a sixth, then he had a fourth in the Perryville. Then he went to the shelf, took some time off. He's going to come back. Do a good look on him on the track. I mean, if you'd like to take a look at horses as they come into the paddock, Artorias would be one to take a look at. Empty Tomb holds a little bit of appeal. Falcone, it's Sammy Camacho, had run at Belmont last time. Maybe can be there up with the pace a little bit. Hasn't really shown it against graded stakes company. Barboza's got a runner down towards the inside in Petulant. This is really a race where it seems to me that some horses are really just trying to take a shot to get some graded stakes, trying to get that graded stakes win. Who's going to be able to get there, get their nose down to the wire first in a graded stake? Bourbonic has done it, but he's going to have to come from way out of it. He just has that deep closing style, and I'm not sure the pace is going to be there. So Nimitz Class, it's 7-2. I think that price comes down a little bit. He's just in too good a form right now. If he continues to hold that form against some horses that I think, maybe kind of just getting back to the races, I'm not sure what I'm going to get. If I'm going to get a little bit of value there with Jevion Toledo, if I feel like I'm second or third choice on Nimitz Class, who's won, one, two, three, four, five races in a row, 10 times from 16 starts, 4-for-4 this year, I'll land on the 8.
Yeah, it's a fun race. There's no question about it. All right, let's move on to the wrap-up. And again, this wraps up an all-stakes pick four, by the way. Race number 13 is the Monmouth Grade 3 event, mile and an eighth on the grass. I'm going to go with Tribhuvan. Potent connections and a horse that hasn't been seen since last year at Saratoga, so that's going to be the question mark. But I pulled up the Manhattan from last year, and that's kind of what I'm keying on. Trebuven's going to be the number 7 horse and does it with a 108 buyer. So it's Chad Brown and company, Michael Dubb, part of the ownership group. So, again, potent connections. But Never Explain last time on Pimlico on Preakness weekend looked pretty good for a Shug. That's a player. Speaking Scout is interesting to me. Commandeer off the second place finish on the move to the turf last time for Jimmy Toner. Again, another fun stakes race. What did you see in the Monmouth?
Yeah, so Trebuven also has runs over this course, and I think that that's something to point out. I mean, Catnip has run over this track, Dinosaur Drive has run over this course, and Trebuven has also as well. Florent Giroux with Chad Brown, it seems like this is a newer pairing. I mean, we've seen them now 6 times, and they've done some nice work. I'm a big fan of Florent Giroux on the front end. I think that when he breaks out of the gate, he can control the pace early. I think he's fantastic on the front end. So I'm with you on Trebuven. It's pretty boring to end up on a favorite like this. You know, my man Brad Thomas here, he says, we're not here to pick favorites, so I've got to find you a little bit of a price, right? So I'm going to go towards the outside with the number 4, Dyna Drive. I mean, it's Tom Morley, a horse that has experience of the course, I think needed that last start in the Fort Marcy. And I think, you know, coming out of a race where City Man finished 3rd in there, 5th beaten 4 1/4 lengths over at Belmont, going a mile and an eighth, now they get a chance to, you know, stretch the legs a little bit. They go back to this mile and an eighth distance, have a little bit more of a run. Maybe, you know, took a little moisture. We'll see if the speed kind of comes back a little bit. Dyna Drive is going to need that type of speed to come back. But this horse was showing some decent runs at Belmont and Saratoga. Had knocked heads with some, you know, decent horses at the level. Is he going to be ready for this level to tackle a horse like Trebuven? If Trebuven catches that breather and he's just kind of cruising on the back stretch, he should be long gone. But let's go with the number 4, Dyna Drive. Try to give you a little bit of a price here. Nick Juarez knows the course. He's been riding here all season. Maybe that can give you a little bit of that pop there to close out that pick 4, that all-stakes pick 4 here at Monmouth on a Saturday.
Starts in race number 10, continues to race 13 on a really fun card down at Monmouth this afternoon. Again, Haskell preview day, so we're looking forward to that big day down at Monmouth as well. Chris, I really appreciate the visit. Appreciate you taking the time. I've run over a little bit from what I promised you, but before I let you go, I do have to tip my cap to you. I did it out over on Twitter. But last week with our Tootsie Glitter, as you said, going to roll on by, I said, I picked up on that. Very good. Every once in a while, I'll have to send a text to Dave Rodman as well. I like when there's a call. It's maybe a little too hip for most of the room. That makes it funnier to me.
Yeah, you know, once in a while when you can throw in those, the little subtle ones that people can catch are always the good ones. And yeah, when you get Sugar is on the lead and our Tootsie is going to pass, I mean, come on, you got to have a little bit of that clever gear to you, I guess. And I don't do it too much, but when I can do it once in a while, it's nice when people can pick up on it. So glad you did. Glad Dave Rodman did. Just tell him he's the man. That's all he needs to know. He is the man.
I laughed, no question about it. Chris, really appreciate the visit, as I say. Appreciate the time. I know it's a big day, so again, appreciate it. We'll check in again, certainly, as the Monmouth meet progresses. But if I don't talk to you in the meantime, if you make it up on days off up to Saratoga, give me a shout. We'll have you come in and sit in with us for a few minutes when we're broadcasting from the backstretch.
That will absolutely be happening. I will pop up there on a dark day and come visit and come see my man Frank and come see all the friends and all the people that I got to know during the winter, and looking forward to that meet as well. And I'll sure make a note to visit you and say hello.
Yeah, we're on the backstretch every morning broadcasting, so we'd love to have you come over. Chris, again, appreciate the visit. Good luck to you and everybody down at Monmouth this afternoon.
Thanks, Seth. Appreciate it.
Chris Griffin from Monmouth Park. Again, a really nice day of racing down there today. Before I go to the break, and again, bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Mike McAdam. We'll talk a little Triple Crown and whatnot. Just wanted to pull up the NTRA polls from this week, because this one, the three-year-old poll only lasts through the Triple Crown. So this three-year-old poll is the last NTR three-year-old poll. And, you know, I mentioned earlier when we were on the handicapping show, if people had to vote now, Forte probably is the horse, the three-year-old that they would put at the top of the class. But if it was an Eclipse vote, it's not really an Eclipse resume at this point. But sure enough, Forte is at the top of the NTRA three-year-old poll. Archangelo, with the win in the Belmont, kind of surprisingly to me, moved to second this week from number 16 previously. Mage goes from number 2 to number 3. That was the surprise to me, that the Kentucky Derby winner is in the third spot. as I said, if I was an Eclipse voter, I think I would be tempted to go with Mage with the Kentucky Derby on the resume. But I do think probably Forte is the best three-year-old right now. But again, on what we've seen on the resume so far, I don't know whether you could kind of pull it. Again, it's half year. It's all theoretical. You could toss things up in the air. But again, to go down the top 10 three-year-olds on what is the final three-year-old poll, Forte, Arcangelo, Mage, National Treasure, Two Fills. Going to be interesting to see Two Fills as the year progresses. Going to be interesting. Arabian Lion, the same. Tappet Trice, number 7. Angel of Empire, number 8. Pretty Mischievous. The Philly is number 9. And Blazing Sevens is number 10. And then the overall poll, which continues, obviously, for the rest of the year. Notable here, and I'll just read off the top 5. Cody's Wish, Elite Power, Clairier in Italian, and Defunded. All coming out of, and Up to the Mark, all coming out of big efforts. And Caravelle. So the top 7 all come out of big efforts last week down at Belmont. But what is notable here is that there are no three-year-olds. And just number 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. So Forte is number 18. And I'm kind of counting because they list the top 10 and then they list the others after that in terms of receiving votes. So on votes, Forte would be number 18. So you got to get down that far in the list to finally get a three-year-old, which again kind of validates what we talked about earlier. This three-year-old crop is just really undefined at this point. But still, Jim Dandy, Haskell, Travers, Pennsylvania Derby, and then they get to face some older horses or maybe do it in the meantime, which maybe second half of the year, the cream will maybe rise to the top. We shall see. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette, who is at all of the Triple Crown races. We'll do a little Triple Crown recap and talk a little specifically Belmont action from last weekend. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette. I said we kind of bookend the Triple Crown with him. We talked to him after he was visiting Louisville in the Derby. In the meantime, he was down in Baltimore for the Preakness, but last weekend in New York for the Belmont Stakes. So we bookend the Triple Crown season with Mike. Good morning.
Morning, Seth. Thanks for having me on. Did you mention that somebody at the Belmont was trying to figure out how many media people were actually hit all three of the Triple Crown races this year, and I think the total was 6 or 7 or so. You know, it was a pretty low number, but very grateful to be one of them.
And we asked you after the Derby, and I heard people Preakness as well, but I'm just curious, speaking of media, what was the press box like for the Belmont Stakes?
It was pretty light. I mean, you've been there, I'm sure, you had that front row, and then they have a bunch of, like, folding tables set up along the back wall, and there was a lot of empty seats there, I would have to say. A lot of the usual suspects were there, but It was, put it this way, it was comfortable. The air conditioning was very cold, and we were wearing our jackets. And usually when there's a pile of people in there, it actually gets a little sweaty in there. So that's my big indicator of how sparse the press box was.
Yeah, I was in the 1 year, but it was I think it was a Triple Crown year. I was in the other room. If you walk past the stairs, the second room, I was shuffled off to a folding table there. But again, without a Triple Crown, it's kind of a different scenario and whatnot. Before we get into some of that, just want to, because I was looking at your Twitter feed yesterday and I saw a couple of interesting things that I wanted to comment on. You posted a picture. You went to a Yankees game. Good for you. You're down there in New York. Why not? But you posted the sumo dog. And I'm a hot dog fan. The sumo dog looked a little beyond my capacity, though. What is on the sumo dog?
You know, I don't even know. I just saw it. I read the list of ingredients. Most of them were really hot. Like, you can see those jalapenos that they
That's
stopped on there.
That's what scared
there's
me
some
away.
Wasabi. I think there's sriracha. I mean, they just piled a ton of hot stuff on there. And I probably went through about 40 napkins just cleaning myself off getting through that baby. So, but it was tasty for sure.
And then I also, further down the Twitter feed, you commented a few weeks ago with the golf tournament being out in Rochester. You said, I think you noted that SportsCenter did a little piece on the garbage plate, which you have explained to me before. But for anybody who's headed down the thruway, a trip out in the Rochester area, give a little overview of the garbage plate.
Garbage plate is kind of self-explanatory. They just throw a ton of stuff on there, mac and cheese. They'll throw a burger, a hot dog, a hot sauce, home fries, and just pile it all on one big plate, and you just kind of shovel your way through it. It's sort of like the sumo dog, where it's just a pile of stuff on there. And generally, the garbage plate is consumed by people who are leaving the bars at 2 o'clock in the morning at Nick Cajo's Diner. So, but it's so well known that for SportsCenter to pick up on it when the tournament was in Rochester, it brought a tear to my eye. Let's put it that way. I was so proud of my hometown.
And you are a Rochester native, but it's funny as you said, because as you were talking, I'm thinking, you know what? That probably would appeal to my crowd. Back in my day, you could drink at 18, and that would have been like the Saturday night. Okay, bar's closed. Let's go get the garbage plate.
That's been my experience with the garbage plate. Absolutely.
Also, did want to show a nice little giveaway last week. And was it a legitimate replica? And I pulled up the picture of the pocket program because it was the anniversary of Secretariat. Was it a legitimate program?
Absolutely, right down to
crazy.
The advertising. If you look at the inside cover, is a full page ad for Schlitz beer, and then the back cover, there's only three ads in the whole thing, and one is the Marlboro Country one on the back. I think I tweeted that as well. But then if you go inside the back cover, they're pushing Old Smuggler's Scotch. So I mean, it, from an advertising standpoint, it's one stop shopping for all your party needs in that program. So I think the Marlboro ad on the back kind of legitimizes that it was a true replica of the program from 73 Secretariat.
Yeah, that's crazy. That was like a fun little giveaway.
Great idea.
Yeah, I heard people talking about it, but when you put the picture up, it got me thinking again. All right, let's talk a little bit about last weekend. First of all, just give us a little feel. How early were you down there, and were you there for Thursday with the cancellation because of the smoke? And had you left from up here? Because up here, that Tuesday and Wednesday, you could see the haze in the area up here in upstate New York, and you could smell the smoke. But then you looked at the pictures of New York with that orange haze. As I say, were you down there for the Thursday cancellation, and what was it like?
Well, I did, like Wednesday, every other tweet in my Twitter feed was that, as you mentioned, that hazy orange, unnatural Manhattan skyline. In fact, somebody even photoshopped a silhouette of Godzilla in there, which I thought was appropriate. So Wednesday, you had to worry because it was bad down there. I think their AQI went over 400. So on the drive down, I went through Albany, and I could still smell smoke in the air. I had my windows up pretty much the whole way down there. The encouraging thing was when I pulled into Belmont around 3:15, and, of course, I knew the card had been canceled. This is on Thursday. So I wasn't in a big hurry to get down there, and I rolled in at about 3:15 in the afternoon, and as soon as I got out of the car, I couldn't smell any smoke. I was like, okay, that's a good sign. And then, as you already mentioned, the Yankee game, our friend Gene Kirshner from the Buffalo News and I went to the Yankee, which was a doubleheader because the Wednesday game had been canceled. And just being at Yankee Stadium, it was just this beautiful spring night, clouds in the sky, but they looked like normal clouds, and you couldn't smell any smoke or anything. So those were encouraging signs. And then, of course, they were good to go on Friday and Saturday. But it was dicey there because it was really bad on Wednesday down there with all that orange, and you're reliant upon the weather and the wind to push it out of there, and there's no guarantee that that's going to happen, but thankfully it did.
Yeah, and just watching the simulcast signal, it absolutely seemed like by Friday it was fine, and Saturday looked like a really nice day, and I was just envious.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, I was completely
envious. It really was.
As I looked in the paddock, and it looked like a really nice crowd. It looked like what you want on a day like that. It looked like a mix of ages, men and women, a lot of young people. So it looked like overall, again, no triple crown on the line, and that's always a little bit of a question mark how the fans are going to turn out. But it was a great card overall, and it looked like a good crowd turned out for Saturday.
Yeah, except for the Rangers fans who were throwing beer cans at UBS Arena, home of the New York Islanders. But other than that, yeah, it was a good crowd and a beautiful day. And you know, as far as the card on Saturday, I mean, it was really, really chalky, but the stars all showed up. So that was kind of what the undercard looked like until we got to the big race.
Yeah, and let's kind of talk about some of that action. We'll look at the stretch run to the Belmont Stakes. Arcangelo gets it done. Forte runs second. Arcangelo, number three. Nice late run by Forte. Winds up second in here. Tappet Trice, the number two, running third. I liked Angel of Empire. The you know, dead heat for fourth was a little bit disappointing for me with Angel of Empire. But as we've talked about now, me, since the results in the Preakness, but also, you know, with this last week, over the last week, the conversation for me has been dominated by, boy, the three-year-old picture is kind of totally up in the air. That said, it was another nice storyline to cap a bunch of nice storylines with Jenna Antonucci. I know you had a pre-race article in the Gazette from our friend Teresa Gennaro, kind of looking at Jenna, and you had comments after the race. So that added a nice factor to the weekend and the storylines as well. Your thoughts on the Belmont results?
Well, as far as the race itself, I thought it was a really smart ride by Javier Castellano, who, by the way, that was his first ever Belmont win. I was more surprised about that than, you know, winning on Mage being his first Derby win of his entire career, 45 years old, Hall of Fame, you name it. The Belmont itself, it was cool because there were, like, literally five across the track right behind Arcangelo. Of course, one of them was National Treasure backing up, but, you know, it was a very exciting race for second place. It didn't look like they were going to catch Arcangelo. As I mentioned, Javier, you know, had a couple spots on the first turn and in the backstretch where he kind of, like, couldn't maintain his position exactly the way he wanted to. But when those two things happened, he was able to position him, get the horse back up in to the spot, and the separation between him and National Treasure that he was looking for, saved a lot of ground, and then made the move on the turn and kind of got the jump a little bit on Hit Show and Angel of Empire and Tappet Trice and some of those that were kind of roaring up from on the outside, and had enough in the tank to win. I don't know if you've seen the replay of Jenna Antonucci, you know, hulking out during the stretch run. I mean, her reaction was priceless, and then you can tell it hits her when the horse wins the race, that she all of a sudden she just freezes and just bends over and just rests her head on a seat back. You know, it really illustrating how much it meant to her. First woman to win any Triple Crown race ever as a trainer. But the other note to that is it was a win for the little guys because you know, these days, you know, the mega barns are winning all the big stuff, and it's tough for some of these smaller operations to get a foothold in the game, at least on the highest level. So between her and the owner, John Ebert of Blue Rose Farm, who, by the way, since he started owning horses in about 12, 13, 15 years ago, He's got four. He's been in the winner's circle four times, and two of them are Arcangelo and the Peter Pan and in the Belmont. So that's how small we're talking about. They bought this horse for $35,000, and now he's a classic winner. But, so that was a great part of the story too. I mean, the gender part of it was the big headline grabber, and for, you know, rightfully so, of course. But it was also a win for the little guys, which was kind of one of my big takeaways.
Yeah, and you know, an offspring of Arrogate on the breeding side of things, that was interesting as well. And as you say, to buy a horse for that kind of price and step up with a trainer who's out there working every day, and you know, it was a good way to put the exclamation point on some good storylines. And you've kind of alluded to it, because I did pull up the picture from your Twitter feed of the jockeys, the Belmont Stakes jockeys, posing before the race. And yeah, that jockey side of things provided great storylines throughout the Triple Crown. I mean, it was amazing that Castellano bookends the Triple Crown, his first Derby and his first Belmont, but John Velasquez had a great Triple Crown season as well and gets his first Preakness.
Unreal. And it's like the jockey angle of it was very New York centric, of course. Yeah. John B's been, you know, riding a lot of big horses for Baffert over the last few years. Going into the Belmont, I have to admit, I didn't even realize that Javier had not won it until the race was over and John Imbrell mentioned it on the live call. And because it's counterintuitive that he hasn't won one yet. I mean, he's won six Travers. You know, he's won everything in New York under the sun. And for that to be his first Belmont, for him to win the Derby, his first Derby before winning his first Belmont, you wouldn't expect that to be the case. But the jockey angle was a very good twist in all three legs. The two old guard, very well-respected guys in New York, collecting all three legs was a great story, especially for people in New York.
Yeah, again, that was part of the great storyline last weekend. And really, as I say, with the Triple Crown, I mean, Castellano does it with two different horses. It was fun. One of the great storylines that bookended the season, Derby Day and Belmont Stakes Day, Cody's Wish. We're going to take a look at the Met Mile here. Cody's Wish is going to be the number one horse getting it done. And, you know, it's... I think Bill Mott said it. It's a great story, yes, but it's a great horse as well. And now they're talking, up at Saratoga for the Whitney. They see this one stretch out. He was phenomenal once again, Cody's Wish. And as I say, it's not just a great performance and a great horse, but it's been a great story being tied in with the young man as well. What was it like being there on site for the victory of Cody's Wish in the Met Mile?
It was vastly different from being at the Derby, because young Cody Dorman, the young man in the wheelchair who's the horse is named after, wasn't there for the Belmont because he lives in Kentucky and it's just very hard for him to travel. So the winner's circle situation was vastly different. But as Bill Mott mentioned, it's a great story by itself, but the horse shows up and he's number one in the NTRA poll for a reason. If the horse shows up and he's really, really good, can't wait to see him in the Whitney. Somebody asked Bill Mott afterwards, who's going to play you in the movie about Cody's Wish, and he said George Clooney, which was pretty funny. But that's sort of like the buzz on this horse. Besides being really good, it's a great story that I think everybody's pretty familiar with by now if you follow racing to any degree.
Yeah, and it kind of helped bookend the season also. And again, he puts in another big buyer number, and it's going to be fun. And that's part of the storyline for us up here in this neck of the woods as well. A lot of these great performances are now going to play out to providing nice stakes action up at Saratoga also. And I would think the possibility of one of those that we've seen up at Saratoga already. But she added another great storyline in the Jiper. I went with Casa Creed, Lee Einsiedler's horse, who was going for a three-peat in the Jiper. And Casa Creed, we're going to watch the stretch run of the Jiper here. Casa Creed's going to be the number 11. And I thought had the momentum. You can see in Lee's pink silks there, Casa Creed is going. You think it's going to go on by. But no, Caravelle is turning out to be a monster. She's the number 12. Big Invasion does get up nicely late to complete the exacta. But Caravelle, the lady against the boys, she has turned into a real monster. And as I say, we saw her, lucky enough to see her last summer right up here at Saratoga.
Yeah, and she's a star in her own right. And going back to the gender thing, everybody, you know, kind of focuses on that side of it. But she's just really, really good on her own merit.
Yeah.
We'd love to see her up here. It's funny because after that race, Brad Cox, his quote was, "I don't think I've ever had a horse beat a filly beat males twice." And I'm like, I'm pretty sure you ought to like just know that off the top of your head. There's no "I don't think." I mean, but it is, you know, it's a remarkable quality that she brings to the table. And hey, run her against anything. If it's a spot fit for her, who cares if it's males? You know, she's the best in her class right in her division right now. Forget about gender.
Yeah, and they were kind of flirting with heading over to Royal Ascot, but elected for that spot, which made you had to pay attention automatically. A little earlier on the card, you know, we talked about the three-year-olds and how the three-year-old division is up for grabs perhaps, but in the Woody Stevens, maybe a horse we'll have to watch in the second half of the season. We'll watch his stretch run. It's number three, Arabian Lion. I pointed out the NTRA poll earlier. Arabian Lion's number six currently in that NTRA poll. Well, the final three-year-old poll wound up number six. Drew's Gold, second. Gilmore, third. But again, off the last couple of victories, Bob Baffert has a three-year-old that I think we have to pay attention to second half of the season.
Yeah, and after Arabian Lion won the Sir Barton on Preakness Day, Baffert, his knee-jerk reaction was, I should have run him in the Preakness. And then as soon as he, but then he cuts him back in distance to seven furlongs. I think he had run mile and 16th four races in a row, including that Sir Barton. So they cut him back to seven furlongs, and he wins. And so then he immediately says, well, maybe I got to run him in the Haskell now at this point and stretch him out again. But it is, you already mentioned the NTRA poll. He's right in the thick of it for the three-year-old division, despite the fact that he has not run in any of the Triple Crown races. Going back to the original point that this division is just absolutely bananas right now. But, you know, he fits right in and be kind of cool. He also has Arabian Knight pointing toward the Haskell. So he said one of the two Arabians will be in there.
And we were talking before we went on the air, and I verified, I knew you were a voter on the NTRA poll, and we were talking a little bit about the votes on the three-year-old side of things. I said on the handicapping show earlier, I think if people had to decide right now, I think Forte is the top three-year-old, but I'm not sure if we were Eclipse voting right now, whether it's an Eclipse resume. I think Mage, maybe with the Kentucky Derby, would attract more attention if it was Eclipse vote. But I think if you're looking at the best three-year-old, people would agree with the poll that Forte is on top. How did you vote amongst the top spots this for this? It is the final three-year-old poll, right?
Yes, it is. And I actually had Arcangelo on top, and I think I already mentioned based on recency. It's kind of tricky at this point in the year because there should be enough body of evidence, but not necessarily. And so you kind of balance recency with resume. And so I kind of gave him a little bit of edge. But if it was, if the season ended right now, I'd probably vote for Mage for the Eclipse Award just based on the Derby and you know, ran pretty well in the Preakness. And go back to the Florida Derby, too. There's another grade one on his resume. If you're voting for the Eclipse Award, it's not based on the resume, and recency doesn't it's less of a factor than it is now, I put it that way. So I had Arcangelo on top just from a recency standpoint, but we'll see what happens from here because it's crazy up in the air at this point.
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier Forte on the poll, that final three-year-old poll was on top, and comfortably so, but Arcangelo second and Mage third, they were only separated by a point, so that was pretty close. I'm going to be interested to see what Two Phils does going forward.
Yeah.
Can Angel of Empire rebound? But again, this three-year-old crop is not going to be defined until we at least get through the summer and maybe hit the older, you know, having these runners face older. But another performance I wanted to kind of get a feel for, what it was like being in and amongst folks watching, going back to the Phipps, where Clairiere repeats in the Phipps, but given the race she ran prior in the Apple Blossom, the big closing effort there, and then we're watching the stretch run here, she's the number six, and just again, I mean, you look here. How is she going to get it done? How is she going to get it done? But now puts in two.
I don't know.
Yeah, just huge performances. And I'm just curious again, what was it like being there live? Because this is one of those that just, this is a performance you tuck in your back pocket and say, phenomenal, I'll remember this for years.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, I mean, the way he did it, and you know, I think from a storyline or from a like a drama standpoint, people always love to see a closer, you know, win like that and come from behind. You know, you go back to Zenyatta and how she used to run. I think a huge part of her appeal wasn't just that she won all the big races, but the way she did it. And you know, this Clairière victory in the Ogden Fifths kind of like stamp her identity, and you know, clearly she's the top of that division right now. But just the way she did it and beating good horses to do it, you know, that'll stick in your memory banks just based on that.
Yeah, and again, you know, given the connections and whatnot, I would say safe to assume we'll see her up at Saratoga, as we will a lot of the runners and the nice storylines up there. Looking forward to it. And I'm going to go back to Friday and get a couple of opinions as well, because I think we'll see, well, clearly we'll see Pretty Mischievous up at Saratoga, but I'd like an opinion on the Acorn. Pretty Mischievous firmly puts herself on the top of the three-year-old filly class. I didn't quite pull the trigger on her last weekend. I thought Money's Gold may have had the edge. Money's Gold winds up running a little bit of a disappointing fourth in the Acorn, but it's Pretty Mischievous and Darth Vader kind of duking it out. Pretty Mischievous gets it done by a head after having won the Kentucky Oaks in the previous start. Give us some thoughts on the Acorn and Pretty Mischievous.
Well, you know, the 180 degree difference from the three-year-old males. I mean, she's obviously the leader of the division, and you go back to the NTRA poll to show you how bananas it is. In the top 10, six different horses got at least one first place vote, and she was one of them, the filly. I don't know who voted for her, but I think that's a pretty good illustration of where she stands in her division. You know, Money's Gold, I don't even remember if I bet on this race, because I wasn't sure about Money's Gold. Her resume speaks for itself, but maybe we'll see her going shorter now. I don't know. But Pretty Mischievous, clearly the number one in the three-year-old filly division. So I think she pretty much established that in the Acorn.
Yeah, and I would assume a couple of appearances up at Saratoga Coaching Club and the Alabama likely on her resume. And another one, just wanted to touch on one more big performance from the weekend, the Just a Game in Italian gets it done pretty convincingly for Chad Brown and Peter Brandt. And I have the buyer numbers here in Italian on Friday, a 103 buyer. The chart margin winds up to be just about four lengths. So again, on Friday, another big performance. No surprise, Chad Brown on the turf.
Nope. And if you go back to last year's Diana, he had four fillies in the Diana on opening weekend. And in Italian was the longest odds when the race started on the tote board of the four. And she wound up winning it. So since then, really has not done anything wrong. She's... It'd be interesting to see what kind of odds you're going to get on her in the Diana this year, but that's where we're going to see her again, absolutely.
Yeah, you're not going to get the 8-1, unfortunately.
No. Maybe 1-8. No.
But maybe this is the year you look for the one of the four Chad Browns that is 8-1.
Right.
Maybe that's the repeat.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, but she's going to be a short price.
Yeah, again, Friday and Saturday, just really nice racing overall on the stakes side of things, and performances that are going to play up here as well. And again, I mentioned buyer figures, but I will note that Cody's Wish with the 112 buyer, Arabian Lion, yeah, the 109. So big numbers coming off. And Arabian Lion is the one that I'm curious, because, as I say, it's going to be interesting to watch him the second half of the season. But, yeah, I'm going to be interested to see, as you say, Baffert has the two Arabians, and who's going to come east and who might stay out west. And also with the Woody Stevens, do we stretch back out, as you kind of alluded to? So that's an interesting horse. And, again, I think given what we saw in the Derby, I'm going to be intrigued to see what Two Phils does going forward.
Yeah, and back to Baffert a little bit. His roster of three-year-olds, we forget about Cave Rock. He's trying to get him back, and National Treasure's still there too. So he'll have a little bit of puzzle to work out as far as keeping him separated, if that's something he wants to try to do, and pick spots. And so we'll see where he lands. But he's going to have a lot of stuff in that division for the second half of the season.
Mike, as always, appreciate the conversation. And again, appreciate your giving us some firsthand looks at the Triple Crown action this season. Great job doing the coverage for the Daily Gazette. So good work there as well. Nice work on the sumo dog.
Thank you. I got to tell you, I'm in the middle of 2 weeks of vacation, and I just checked the Finger Lakes schedule. We're going to be at Canandaigua Lake again. The first full week of the Saratoga meet, and unfortunately the New York Derby, they pushed it back a week, so it's on the 24th. I was kind of hoping to see that again because I'm going to be in the neighborhood, but I'll get over there anyway.
yeah, stop by. Say hello to our friend Tony Kahlo. We have Tony on every Sunday now talking a little bit of Monday action, so swing by and say hello to Tony for us when you're out there.
I will do that, for sure.
Mike, again, appreciate the visit. We will certainly talk again. If not, in the meantime, we'll have you plugged in certainly once or twice on the backstretch during the season. So we'll see you then.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, Seth. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette. Again, down at Belmont this past weekend, Baltimore on Preakness weekend, Louisville on Derby weekend, and we bookended the Triple Crown season with him. A little bit earlier, Chris Griffin from Monmouth. Don't forget, great Monmouth card today. We went through that all-stakes pick four. That's going to be a fun pick four for this afternoon that you can jump into and play around with. But also some Belmont action this afternoon, and I'll be taking a look at some of that on OTB Live, which will kick off about an hour and a half or so for a Saturday afternoon. Do want to remind you that there is a fan appreciation day today at the Kennedy's Tavern Easy Bet in Troy. Fan appreciation days, first 25 folks get a voucher, giveaway item, past performances, free food for everybody. There's a contest that everybody can jump into and maybe win a little extra something. That all happens this afternoon at the Kennedy's Tavern Easy Bet branch in Troy. Stop by so we can say thank you to you for your patronage. Other than that, it's been a fun morning. Hopefully you've enjoyed some of the handicapping, got some good ideas for some of the afternoon action, a little preview, a little review on this morning's programming. And as I say, hopefully it benefits for this afternoon and beyond. And again, we'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. Seth Merrow in the studio. Appreciate your tuning in. We'll see you in a little bit. We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.